Accession number 8657, reel number 1.
Mr. Green, reel 1. When did you first join the army, and why did you decide to join?
Well, there was no actual reason why I actually joined the army, but on the occasion I did join was that I had a job, I was working, I was only young. I won't say I was truly ambitious, but on this Monday morning, and I shall never forget it because it was 3 days before my birthday, it was on January the 6th, 1933. I was on my way to work, I was working for an engineering firm in Raynham, Essex, and I used to stop at the Romford station to go in there and have a cup of tea prior to walking onto the Raynham. And I met two of my pals in there who I knew from school days. And they asked me where I was going. I told them I was going to work. I said, what are you doing? They said, nothing. We're going to join the army. Would you like to come with us? So, because I sat there over a cup of tea pondering for a while. And then I thought to myself, well, why not? Because at the time, that then, I said, my home had actually been broken up, although my mother had remarried, and I had a nice home then. But anyhow, they kept calling me chicken because I wouldn't go and join up. So I says, okay. I said, I'll come with you to join up. So we bided our time in the cafe over a cup of tea and one of the old cheesecakes, which we used to have at the time in there. And it got towards 9 o'clock and we walked along the road about 150 yards along the road in South Street, Romford, to the recruiting office. We strolled in there, see the, I don't know if it was sergeant or corporal in there, the enlisted bloke in there. And we said we want to join the army. So he took our names and that, and he said, have we got any consent, which we hadn't. I said at first, yes, I said, I've got me mother's consent to join up, which I hadn't got. So he said, all right, he says, sir, I'll give you a railway warrant. He said, you'll have to go to Brentwood. So the three of us went. Boarded a train at Romford, off we went to Brentwood, which was the recruiting depot of the Essex Regiment, of which I wanted to join the Essex on reasons that one of my cousins was in the Essex, named Green, and once we get to Worley, reports into the barracks. We had a cup of tea up there in the dining room and that, and they sent us over to the hospital, which is adjoining the square at Worley. I don't know it at all. And of course, we could not see the doctor for a week. So that meant staying in Worley for a week. So I made inquiries about going home. He said, no, you can't go home. You've got to stay in here. And I thought, well, that's very handy. I've let myself in something nice now, like, you know. So anyhow, I thought, well, I might get hung for something, you know, than anything. So I stayed there for the week. Saw the doctor. And as it happened, I'll say, well, you say whether I was the lucky or the unlucky one, but I was the only one that passed the doctor. The other two never. One had flat feet and the other one had a perforated eardrum. Because I was A1.
You were in perfect condition.
Because they gets me to join the army, they get rejected, and I'm the unlucky one or the lucky one, and I goes. So anyhow, I stayed in the hospital for about, I think it was another day, and I went, they marched me over to the barracks, and got fitted up, my equipment and everything, and because in them days, you know what it's like, when you get your equipment there, it's, you have this, you have that, whether it fitted or whether it didn't fit, you just had to make do with it sort of thing, and that was that. And of course you get the rifle and things like that, you know, which was all new to me. I didn't expect, you know, to ever be in. But anyhow, I joined it, and that was that for myself. Well, it was 7 years with the colours and 5 years on reserve, and it's got to be my home for 7 years. So that I started buckling under. Mind you, trouble came thick and fast. I mean, I was one of those sort of thing, you know. Although I wanted to make the army my career, but I was always on CB. 9 times out of 10, I was on CB. It wasn't capital punishments, it was just silly little things. I mean, I was perhaps not having my hair cut and not cleaning my rifle up enough, you know what it's like in them days in peacetime. I mean, everything had to be immaculate. And perhaps not staying in one day and cleaning up coal buckets and boxes, which had to be absolutely burnished. I mean, you had to see to shave in them sort of thing. And not doing my PT right over in the gyms and back answering and things like that. You know, just silly little things that I was getting 3 day CB, 4 day CB, 5 day CB, something like that. And once I was caught in Romford Market in PT kit, which I run home, and I got caught down here with my platoon sergeant, that was Sergeant Small at the time, I think since died now. And because he ordered me back to barracks, and because I went back, I was up on the mat the next morning, I got 5 day CB for that. And I remember me. Stepfather and mother coming up to barracks one Sunday. I was on the square cleaning up coal buckets and what that was watching me there. But anyhow, the 6 months at the depot went pretty well, very good. And then I was drafted on to Pembroke Dock, South Wales.
How did your mother take to you joining the army?
Oh, by the way, that's the thing, that's a big mistake, really. I forgot to tell you about that. Of course, after a week in Wally Barracks, you were allowed out on the following weekend, which I had a pass. It was only a 12-hour pass, because you can only go out the one day. And of course, I went home to my mother and that, and she was living in Hainault Road, Romford at the time. And where the hell have you been, and what have you done, and things like that. And so I says, well, we are, Mum. And I just slung my attestation paper on the table. She said, what's that? I said, well, I joined the army. She said, you can't join the army. She said, you're underage. I said, well, it's just too bad. I said, I've joined. She says, well, we'll have to get you out. I said, well, you can't. I said, it's costing £25, I think it wasn't that day, £25 to get you out, which was a hell of a lot of money to us anyhow. So my stepfather came in from work, and of course my mother told him, and, oh, you're not going in there, said you're underage, I'll get you out. I said, well, I said, there's one thing, you might as well have it now clear. I said, if you do get me out, I said, I'm not stopping home. I said, because I should just go again. I said, oh, I've got a nice home. I had no problems at home, mind you, no problems at all. So he turned around, he says, all right, he says, you made your bed, you lie in it. I says, fair enough. What's so anyhow, I stayed there and I had my tea and all that, you know, and I said to my mother, I says, well, Mum, I said, I've got to be back at 9 o'clock, which I had to be back at 9. And I said, I'm going back now. So I just remember, you know, shedding a few tears as I went, and that was it. And after that, everything was AY, like, you know.
You say you had a cousin in the army,
yes,
in the regiment. Was there a tradition of service in the army in your family?
No, not a great. No, only my stepfather, he was in the early war, 1914-18 war. He lost an eye in that. That's why they called him Nelson, matter of fact, anyhow. And it was actually his son. That's why I took over the name of Green. It was his son that was in it, so I actually wanted to be in the Essex with him at the time. That was one of the reasons why I did choose the Essex Regiment. And of course, not only that, it was on the doorstep to me. I thought to myself, well, it's only at Brentwood I can get home when I want to, sort of thing, which was quite handy at the time, until such times, as I tell you. After I was in June Squad, that was 1933, after your 6 months initial training at Brentwood, then of course you moved up to the battalion, which was stationed at Pembroke Dock, South Wales at the time, which we did do. So, okay, we moved off, we were posted to the battalion at Pembroke Dock, landed there, and everything was going quite smoothly, and that. We went on training to a place called Mere Clogop in South Wales. We used to do a month's training, always under, well, it was up in the clouds, but always underwater, washed out and everything, day after day. And then it was getting quite settled in with the battalion, a few little skirmishes with the provost sergeant here and there, like, you know, because after you joined the battalion, you was allowed to wear civilian clothes to go out in, see, which, okay, I had a suit of civilian clothes and that, and that was everything, you know. I thought, right, I'm going to buckle down, and this is my service now.
Did you settle down eventually and stop getting CB and other?
Yes, I did settle down, which, well, quite a lot, really. I was still one of those, you know, I wasn't a rebel, no way near a rebel, because it didn't pay to be a rebel. Not in them days, not in peacetime, it didn't pay to be a rebel. Because they was harder for you than it was you being hard for them. Because they can make your life very unbearable, no doubt about that. Not like it is today. So, anyhow, I enjoyed my stay at Pembroke Dock. And it was while it was first year at Pembroke Dock, we moved to Penally from Pembroke Dock, still in South Wales, to fire our annual course, which I'd done very well. I got a marksman at that. And it was while I was there, it was only, we used to go down at a company at a time to do that. And it was while I was there that I got out up in the cookhouse, well, actually, officer's mess cook. The bloke they had in there, I forget his name there, a very tall bloke. Very familiar. I can see him now. So, I was out firing my course one day there, and I came back in, and the platoon sergeant come up to me. He says, "Green," he said, "I've got a job for you." So I says, "What's that?" He said, "Oh," he says, "it's all right." He said, "There's money in it." I said, "Well, that's all right, anything with money in, I'll be there." It was a Delfman. That's like, washing up. down in the officer's mess. And I said, fair enough. So I went down the officer's mess, reported to the mess corporal. His name was Clark, Corporal Clark. And he told me what to do. It was just washing up after dinner service and all that sort of thing. So he moved me bed down here. I was sleeping down here in the quarters. And apparently, the next day I had to go out and still find my course, because I still had to go and do that, because it was an annual event. And I came back from the range on this certain day, and he came up to me and says, "Can you cook?" I said, "No." I said, "Never done cooking." He said, "Well," he says, "would you like to have a go?" I said, "Well, I don't mind." You know, I was one of those blokes, you know. I didn't care. That's that, I'll have a go. So I said, "Well, what's up?" I can't forget his name now, the big bloke, John, I think his name was. So I said, "What's happening?" Oh, he says, "Made hell of a mess of the officer's dinner. Apparently he'd put the chickens and all, turkey, whatever it was, in the oven with all their innards still in and cooked them." So you can quite imagine what that was like. So anyhow, I had a go at that, and of course, not being big-headed, but I was praised up for what I turned out. I mean, I've never done it before, but it's just a bit of initiative and that. And since then, I carried on cooking in the officer's mess.
Were you still cooking then when you went off to Palestine?
Well, no. I was. Before we went to Palestine, we went from Pembroke Dock, we moved down to Catterick, Hooge Lines, Catterick Camp. And I was in the mess there with the mess sergeant, Sergeant Purser, whose wife, Mrs. Purser, she was the mess cook, because she'd been on a course at the Savoy Hotel, London. So, I mean, they used to pay her, I don't know what it was in here. Of course, my pay went up a bit higher, you know, I was getting extra money every month. And she took me under her wing, and she was a very, very good cook. And she took me under her wing, as I say, and she taught me quite a bit of cooking, which, when we used to go out in camps after that, I used to go out. I used to run the kitchen myself, do all the cooking myself, do all the ordering myself, and I used to make them a turnover. I used to be pleased with that, you know, to think that I've gone out and done it and made a bit of turnover for them. And I carried on in the officer's mess for quite a considerable time, up to the time the battalion was under orders then, 1934-35, to go to Palestine.
What did you make of Palestine when you got there?
Well, I nearly didn't go, because I was going to desert, tell you the truth. I don't even want me to tell you that story. Well, as it happened, I got in with a couple of lads there, and they didn't want to go. And I says, I'm not all that keen sort of thing, we worked things out. I'm going to catch a lorry up on the Great North Road at Catterick Bridge, and I was going to desert. Well, we'd been issued with all our tropical gear, and I went out and flogged it. Not outside the camp, but inside the camp to different people in the camp. And the morning that we was going to desert, the three of us, I went up to them, back to a bit of lunch up out in the officer's mess, and I just scarped it out. When I got up to there, Barrett went to see if I was coming, they were still in bed. They said it wasn't going because they'd been taken off the draft. So there's another clang arrived, fitting me in. So I said, OK, so next day I had to go around and buy all my kit back before we marched off. Anyhow, I assembled on the square and at Wyvern, and off we went to Palestine.
Why weren't you keen to go?
I don't know. It was just an urge I had come on at the spur at the moment, you know, that, do I want to go or don't I want to go? You know, I think if they actually had deserted, I think I'd have gone with them. But being as they hadn't, I mean, they were two great friends of mine, and I didn't want to be parted from them at the time. And I think that if they had deserted, I think I would have deserted with them. But as it happened, no way. They didn't want to, well, they was taken off the draft. I forget what it was. One of them was owing sickness or something. What it, and the other one was, I don't know. But because we had a certain amount of staying behind. So I said, OK, because formed up, and I went off with a battalion. And we went on the HMS Dilwarra. Now, that was the first troop ship, new troop ship, that was built that we went out on, and we had a terrible voyage out there because that was top heavy. Because I remember afterwards they refitted it out as a troop ship carrier, which, well, it was actually built as a troop ship carrier. And we landed at Haifa and went to Peninsula Barracks at Haifa by Bat Galim. And believe me, it's a second home to me.
You liked it there?
Oh, I loved it. I've always wanted to go back to Palestine. Always wanted to go back. We had our times and we had good times. I lost some good mates out there. But it was a place that I always liked. I mean, we got on all right with the Jews, we got all right with the Arabs. And we had some marvellous times with the Arabs, tell you the truth. I mean, when we was called out to raid a village, if bandits in the village or anything like that, and we took over the village, we accommodated the village and we had what we wanted. I mean, if we give them orders, we want the 6 chickens and 2 dozen eggs, they'd be there. But not so much like with the Jews sort of thing. I mean, if we went to a Jewish kibbutzah, whatever, kibbutzahs, whatever they call them, and we wanted a couple of oranges and that, you get on your hands and knees to get an orange. Unless you went and pinched them yourself, the same as watermelons. I mean, you could go on an Arab land and pick up a watermelon, and that was that sort of thing. Oh, we had a lovely time out here. The things we got up to was unbelievable. Very unbelievable. But as I say, we had our hard times here. I mean, we never knew when we were going to be called out, because many a time we used to be on standby for 24, 48 hours at a time in full marching order with our ammunition and everything all ready to be out, and you had to be out and all.
What sort of things were you called out for? Was it riots or was
it was
banditry?
Riots. It was mostly banditry. I mean, they'd occupy a village and they'd shoot the village up and all that. And, of course, we'd get a message in that there's so many bandits in the village. And I remember one time, at a place called El Cadbury. There's a little village between Acre and Safed. And, of course, going from Acre, once you leave Acre, there's a big prison there. I don't know if you know. There's a big prison at Acre. But once you leave prison, the prison compound there, you go on, it's only a one road to Safed, it's around the mountainsides. And anyhow, we was at this village here on that morning, and we'd been called out on a Christmas Eve. You can just imagine how choked we was out of barracks on a Christmas Eve. And we occupied this village, Old Cadbury, and it was on Christmas morning. And a chap came down to the village. Apparently he was a Mukhtar in the village, a same man in the village. And he came down and turned around and says that there was a bandit up in one of the houses. So we says, OK. So it was me and 2 more blokes. I've got a photo of one bloke. Actually, he was killed at Gallaback. And we went up to this house, surrounding the house, and we told the Mukhtar there who was with us to tell him to come out, otherwise we'd go break in and shoot him. So he spoke to him in the Arabic, and he came out, and we took him down to the big house, the Sheikh's house, that we had occupied as our headquarters. And we was going to put him up against the wall and shoot him. Because, okay, as far as we was concerned, he was a bandit, and we just shot. So it was comical, really. Now we had him up against the wall, and that was making a bit of a firing squad up. And I think it was mostly to frighten him. I mean, we had a corporal that was in charge. And the Mukhtar come up and he turned around, no, I didn't want him shot, you see. All he wanted was to make him frightened because he wasn't paying 5 piastres towards the hens and the chickens and the eggs that we was having. but it turned out that he wasn't a bandit. So, I mean, we had episodes like that all the way along the line sort of thing, you know, in Palestine.
A grim sense of humour.
Oh, it was. And you had to go around with that sense of humour, especially with them arrows and that, because some of them were quite good. I found them quite good. A lot of the arrows was very good. Very understanding of them. After we moved from Palestine to Port Said, I had a chap there. Johnny, his name was. I often wish I could go back and see him. And he was an Arab chap, and he was out this world to me. He was like a brother to me out there. He was very nice.
Did you have any real stand-up fights against gangs of bandits?
No, because, I mean, if we raided a village, they would either shot or give us over. They never actually come out to stand up and fight or anything, because as we caught them, then they made a big compound at Kaduri School, Mount Tabor. It was a sort of a college school. And it's on the top of a mountain, which overlooked all the pipeline, to Mafraq, a place called Mafraq. And you had them all in sections, H4, H3, H2, H1, right way along. And we used to stand up, and we used to get up in the top of the school at night, and we used to see different sections go up in smoke. And because we knew we was called out, because they used to cut the pipeline and set light to it. Of course, only burning that section, but they burned for 3 or 4 days, those sections. But a stand-up fight, no, we never had, because, as I say, they used to come out. What wasn't killed would come out, in any case. And we used to take them. Mind you, I've seen some gruesome things. I mean, arms off, heads off, and God knows what else. Which had been done. I did actually smuggle a lot of photographs home in my kit box when war broke out, which I had to send home, which we wasn't allowed to have. But anyhow, they got home, but apparently when I come home, they're all gone by 2 or 3. I think it's about 4 or 5 in Melbourne, on the race, and those dead bandits, what I showed you. Yeah, and we used to take them up to this Kaduri School, Mount Tabor, which actually was we made our headquarters at the time. We had them in a big compound, so we used to get our own back on them because we used to beat them up something terrible at times. Which, it was only out of, I won't say pity for the actual Arabs or anything like that. It was just, I mean, you get called out here in the middle of the night or something like that, I mean, you're a bit mad over it, and it don't matter who you come up against. I know when I was a youngster, young and stupid, you just let fly, which I did used to let fly. No getting away from it. So, and that's how we used to go. But Palestine itself, it was my second home. I loved it.
While you were there, did you think that a war against Germany was unlikely?
Well, I knew that, because there's a bit of a story. It's so long, my history sort of thing, you know, because there's a bit of a story I've missed out, haven't I? When I was at Catterick, I don't know if you remember, 1933-34, the plebiscite of the Saarbrücken. All right? Sorry. Well, it was an international force that had to go to Saarbrücken. And our battalion was the only battalion of the British that was picked out to go. The 1st Essex. And we went there. And I went because this Mess Sergeant's wife, she went as well with us, because it was only more or less collecting in ballot boxes. And we went to a place called Homburg. And when we was there, we were stationed at Homburg, and the battalion was split up. Saarbrücken and other different German villages. Now, this is going back 1933-34, I think, was, if not mistaken. And we was allowed out, and we used to have kiddies come up here. 3-4 year old Al Hitler. Now, that was going back in that time. And anyhow, we had a decent time. We was liked by the people out there because we wasn't out there to do any fighting or anything like that. It was only to collect the ballot boxes. We were an international force. I mean, there was the Swiss, us, Italians, French, Belgium, all that sort of thing. So it was handed over to Saarbrücken, which Hitler wanted very bad at the time, which he got. He got it and all. But we could see, I says to several people, and several people said to me, that he's out for making trouble, which he was right from then. And I turned around to my mother and said it when I came home, that there'd be trouble out there, because I brought home a big German eagle with a swastika on it. When war broke out, I was abroad at the time, but my mother slung it right out the window and broke it up. Because no way would she have that. It was lovely. I treasured that, matter of fact. But we could see then that war was on the horizon with him. I saw it, and I think a few more of the lads and that saw it and all. Because he was, even then, I mean, at that time, he was a great man, you know. There's no getting away from it. He was a great man at that time.
Was there any moment when you thought, right, this is it, a war can't be avoided, it's coming soon?
No. No, I don't think I ever had that in mind. Not to that great extent. And I mean, the whole time I was abroad, finishing my service abroad, when we moved from Palestine back down into Egypt, that no way did I actually think until, you know, I mean, the papers was getting full of it and everything like that. But I knew as soon as we got on that boat and we was coming, taken off, that war had been declared. But no way did, I don't think any of us did, sort of thing, you know. Although we was a hell of a lot of rumours going around, you know, we was getting prepared for this and getting prepared for that, but no way did we think it would hit us out in the Middle East. At home, yes, but not out there. Not as it actually expanded into a world war, not in the, you know, because the Italians and all that came in it. No way did we expect that.
So you hadn't thought of Italy as an enemy?
Oh no way. I don't think any of it. Well, when we was at port side, that just shows you how it was. We were stationed at there was only a platoon of us, and the battalion was split up again. At Ismailia. And one company was over in Cyprus, which they had to go over, not because of any part of war coming on or anything like that, but it was a station that one company did have to go over there. And one company was at Ismailia, which was my company, B Company of the Essex, and I was in the platoon that went down to halfway up the Suez. Kantara. We've got two, Kantara East, Kantara West. Kantara East was the junction rail going into Palestine from Haifa. And we were stationed there because we was at the old 1914-18 war, GOC's rest house. And that was our billet. And we used to go out there because actually our part there then was for smuggling, dope smuggling.